We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Untangle, the meditation podcast from Gaiam. I'm your host, Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who have devoted their lives to teaching and helping others through meditation. In today's episode, I sat down with Emily Fletcher. Emily is a former Broadway actress who began suffering from insomnia and graying hair at the age of 26. A fellow actress turned her on to meditation, and she's never been the same since. She's the founder of Ziva Meditation in Manhattan and is also the voice of the performance collection on Gaiam's Meditation Studio app, where she teaches how to use meditation as a sort of internal pep talk before a first date, job interview, or even public speaking event. Emily will also be hosting some interviews on this very podcast in the future, talking to both fellow experts and her own students. But first, let's meet Emily. Emily, it is such a pleasure to have you here today. I'm so excited to interview you.
Me too.
You are truly one of my favorite instructors on Gaiam's meditation app, and I know you have your own business where you teach meditation. So I would love to hear a little bit about that. And just tell me a little bit about your start in meditation.
Yes. So you're right. I have a studio called Ziva Meditation, Z-I-V-A, which is a Sanskrit word that means bliss. Oh. I also found out after I chose that name that it's a Hebrew name that means one who is radiant or kind. Since bliss, radiance, and kindness are pretty common side effects of meditation, it felt like a good name. Plus, I thought it looked good on a t-shirt, which it totally does. So that's the company. It's Ziva Meditation. And we teach in-person courses in New York and L.A. And I actually started the world's first online meditation training called Ziva Mind, which I'm really proud of because it's giving people access to meditation in a way that they didn't have before. It was an experiment, and it's been a really happy one. People, their lives are changing, and their insomnia is going away, and their anxiety is being reduced, and they're having less depression and higher fertility. I have like 70 pregnant women right now in the Ziva world, and I'm so thrilled about it.
Wait a minute. That's crazy.
It's crazy. Day I get another email from a woman saying she's pregnant.
Okay, so you need to tell us what you're teaching.
I know.
Because I want meditation to be accessible to so many people, and I want them to believe in all of the possibilities.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is real. I mean, and this is such an exciting time to be alive because neuroscience is catching up to what these Indian dudes have been saying for 6,000 years. And so the skeptics, you don't have to do it, but you can't write it off anymore.
But tell me what you're teaching that you're getting such amazing results. And how long does it take? Because I don't want, you know, somebody listening that's having trouble getting pregnant and they're like, I'm going to meditate and I'm going to get pregnant in 2 months. So let's talk about what makes that real for people and what they really need to do to make these kinds of shifts in their lives.
Mm-hmm. So the reason why meditation increases fertility is a lot of reasons. I sort of accidentally become the meditation sexpert because I talk a lot about the neuroscience of how meditation can improve your sex. And the reality is that if you're enjoying sex more, if you're happier when you're having sex, you're more likely to get pregnant. Because when your body gets stressed, it basically starts preparing for a predatory attack. The human body reacts to stress in a way that used to be very adaptive. It is now maladaptive, meaning that if your body launches into fight or flight, a series of chemical reactions happens in the body. First thing is that your digestion floods with acid to shut down digestion because it takes a lot of energy to digest your food and you need all hands on deck to fight or flee this saber-toothed tiger or whatever it is that's attacking you.
Mm-hmm.
That same acid seeps onto your skin, so that if that tiger bites into you, you don't taste very good. Your adrenaline levels increase, your cortisol levels increase, and those chemicals are acidic in nature. The whole point of them is to give you superhuman strength to outrun that tiger or to lift a car off of a baby. The other thing that happens is that your bladder and bowels evacuate, which is not so sexy.
You think?
Yeah. But again, you need to be light on your feet to fight or flee this predatory attack. Also, your immune system goes to the back burner because who cares if you're going to get cancer if you're about to be killed by a tiger? Again, you need all hands on deck to handle what's going on. So this series of chemical reactions is actually very good for you if your demands are saber-toothed tigers. But that's not our demands anymore. Our demands are now emails and text messages and bosses and getting fired and overnight flights and traffic, none of which call for a fight or flight stress reaction. So in addition to this fight or flight stress reaction becoming maladaptive, we never launch into the fight or flee. This is why people say that exercise is their meditation. They think, well, if I just go to the gym, then they outrun that tiger. So they can burn off the adrenaline and cortisol that they've accumulated that day in their body. But if you want to handle the lifetime of stresses that most of us have been accumulating, you actually have to give your body rest. And in the style of meditation that I teach at Ziva, you're giving your body rest that is somewhere between 2 to 5 times deeper than sleep. And that's not an insignificant point, because when you give your body the rest that it needs, it knows how to heal itself. So 1 in 4 cohabitating couples in the U.S. say that the number one reason that they don't have as much sex as they want to is because they're too tired. So if you're meditating and you're getting these basically like supercharged power naps, then you're more awake on the other side. You have more energy to have sex more often. You know, when you start wiping away that stress, you start to taste your food more. You start to see the birds chirping and the sun shining, for, you know, lack of a less hippy-dippy analogy. Yeah, yeah. But actually your senses get heightened.
What I'm gleaning from this is, we reduce our stress when we meditate. We're not as tired because the levels of relaxation and sleep that we're getting are much deeper. And so that then it has a neurological effect on us and makes us more able to be present for sex, be more excited, be more aware of our partner's needs or of our own physiology.
So there's two things at play here. One is that we're giving the body deep rest so that we're more awake on the other side.
Right.
So we have more energy for sex. The other thing that's happening is that, yes, meditation is the number one most effective stress relieving tool that we have. It's as effective, sometimes more effective, as antidepressants or anti-anxiety. So because you have less stress in your body, you're actually heightening your senses so you can enjoy the sex more. The other thing that's happening is that adrenaline and cortisol, which are those fight or flight chemicals, the meditation gets rid of that pretty quickly, and it starts flooding your brain with bliss chemicals, which is dopamine and serotonin.
Okay, so meditation is great for sex, so why would somebody say no to that?
Sure.
What else is meditation good for?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you had asked originally my personal experience. And one of the biggest things it's done for me is that it cured my insomnia on the first day of the first course I ever took. So I have a sort of weird journey from Broadway showgirl to meditation teacher. And I was on Broadway for 10 years. My last Broadway show was A Chorus Line, and I was understudying 3 of the lead roles, which basically means you show up to the theater and have no idea what's going to happen. Sometimes I would start the show as one character, and then they'd switch me to another one. Or I'd just be chilling in my dressing room doing my taxes, and someone would come on the loudspeaker and say, Emily Fletcher, we need you on the stage.
Stressful.
Yeah, it's just constant. Like, I remember one moment I was in my dressing room, like, rocking myself into basically, like, a dither, like, unable to really conceptualize the fact that I had to go on stage and subject myself to that level of torture. But actually what it showed me is that here I am living my dream, doing the thing I had wanted to do since I was 8, and I was miserable.
Were you anxious? I mean, yes, that's stressful, but anxiety levels really high to be called at the last minute like that?
Yeah, it was basically constant anxiety. Yeah. I never let my mind rest, because even when I wasn't doing the show, I was constantly reviewing all 3 of those tracks in my head.
I would think that would be...
Yeah, it was tough.
Super anxiety producing.
What was worse, though, was that I really thought since I was a little girl, since I was 8 years old, I thought, well, once I get on Broadway,
everything will be fine.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be, you know, martinis with Liza at Sardi's.
Dream come true.
Yeah. And actually 3 weeks after I got my Broadway debut when I was 22 was the saddest I had ever been. And so in hindsight, what I was learning is that I was more interested in the happiness of pursuit than I was the pursuit of happiness.
So what happened at 22? So you get your first job on Broadway, mm-hmm. and you're supposed to be happy, but you're afraid, stressed, scared or this wasn't what I thought it would be?
It was a combination of it felt like my goal had been taken away from me. Mm. And I have been working towards this thing since I was 8.
Oh, wow.
And it was the I'll be happy when syndrome, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. I'll be happy when I graduate. I'll be happy when I get on Broadway. I'll be happy when I get a boyfriend. When I'll be happy when I get $1 million. We all do it in our own sneaky ways. And actually, I feel very thankful to have achieved this pretty monumental lifetime goal at 22 so that I didn't spend 30 more years thinking that there was a pot of gold at the end of this arbitrary rainbow. So because I achieved it pretty young in life, I started thinking, well, it's not here. I'm still sad. I'm still stressed.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety or just need to recharge your batteries so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great, and this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now, back to our show.
As a matter of fact, I'm sadder than I was when I was going towards my goal.
So you stayed in theater.
Yeah, I just thought, well, it must be the next Broadway show. And it must be the next one, and the next one. And I did that for 10 years.
Okay.
And then it wasn't...
you were miserable the whole time.
No, I wasn't miserable the whole time. 3 weeks after I got the show was like decidedly like, it felt like depression and I'd never experienced that before. And I didn't even know it when it was going on. It wasn't until I look back at it that I realized what was happening because I was still under this I'll be happy when syndrome. So I just kept chasing different things. Boyfriend, agent, money, show.
Were you a happy kid?
Yeah.
For the most part?
Yeah.
So happy leading up to this, but thinking I'm going to be happier. This is my dream. I'm going to do whatever it takes mm-hmm. to get there. And then you get there and you're like, oh, maybe this isn't it.
Yeah, because we're all addicted to our own stuff. You know, some people are addicted to drugs. Some people are addicted to sex. I was addicted to achieving.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that once I achieve this thing, then I'll be happy. And the beautiful thing that meditation does is that it gives you access to your own bliss and fulfillment in the only place that it resides, which is inside of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so once you get that direct access pass, you're no longer under this illusion that that anything outside of you can make you or break you. It took me getting so stressed and going gray at 26 and having insomnia and getting sick and getting injured and basically sucking at my job for me to try something as quote unquote radical as meditation, which 10 years ago, no one was talking about it like they are now. So it was pretty radical.
What was your first experience with meditation and what inspired you to go try it?
It was just the insomnia, which, you know, that's one of the first things they do to prisoners of war is deprive them of sleep.
Yeah.
So it's not to say just insomnia because it's pretty intense
it's a big deal.
When
yeah.
you're in it. But my life on paper was great. You know, I was living the dream, but, you know, sick, tired, stressed, insomnia going gray. So thankfully, this woman sitting next to me in the dressing room at a Chorus Line, she was understudying 5 of the lead roles, which to this day, I don't know how she did it, but this woman was nailing it. I mean, every song she sang was a celebration. Every dance she did was effortless. Every bite of food this woman ate, she would celebrate it. And I was like, okay, lady, I'm going to need to have some of what she's having. And I said, what are you doing? And she said, I meditate. And I didn't believe her because this was 10 years ago. But finally, it got so bad that I went along to this intro to Vedic meditation talk. I liked what I heard, so I signed up for this 4-day course. And on the first day of the first course, I was meditating. I had no idea what that meant, but I was doing something different than I had ever done before. I was in a different state of consciousness than I had ever experienced.
So what was the meditation that you were doing on that first day? Was it breath? Was it mantra? What kind of meditation was it that you felt like you were already in it so quickly?
Vedic meditation. So V-E-D-I-C comes from the Sanskrit word Veda, which means knowledge, and that's what I teach now at Ziva. It's the basis of what I teach. I teach a combination of Vedic and mindfulness, but it's very powerful, and in it you're given your own mantra, which is not like, I'm a strong, angry woman, or like, I want $1 million. Those aren't mantras. Those are slogans.
Right.
And a mantra is actually a Sanskrit word. Man means mind, and trut means vehicle. So these are mind vehicles. They're meaningless, primordial sounds. And it is the sound quality of the mantra that de-excites the nervous system and gives your body that deep rest that is so healing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about surrendering. It's like you get the key to the car, you learn how to turn it on, and then you let your body do the work. Your left brain is in charge of the past and the future, which is where your stress hangs out. Your left brain is in charge of your critical thought, your analytical thought, language, math, all really important. But for most of us, we've been taking that left brain to the gym for a very long time, and our right brains are atrophying. Now, the right brain is the piece of us that's in charge of the right now. It's in charge of present moment awareness, creativity, intuition, creative problem solving, color, music. All of these things are right brain phenomenon. And when you start to integrate, when you practice this style of meditation, right and left brains start to talk to each other and function in unison, then a lot of things happen. One, you become more mindful in your waking state because you're not constantly past future, past future, past future. It's like you're taking your right brain to the gym, which allows you to be more present and more mindful. Also, the stronger this right brain gets, the more able you are to access a creative solution to something, even in the middle of a high demand situation. For most of us, the left brain is so strong. And when we're in a high demand situation, we can't really access that creative problem solving, that intuition in the moment. It's not until later when we feel safe and secure that then the ideas start to flow. So when you start meditating, you actually start to take your right brain to the gym. Now, not to get too deep down the neuroscience rabbit hole, but here goes.
Okay. Buckle your seatbelts, everyone.
Buckle your seatbelts, everybody. The other cool thing that happens when you practice Vedic meditation is that the corpus callosum gets stronger.
Okay.
So the corpus callosum is the thin white strip that connects the right and left parts of your brain. Now, if you look at a human brain, it actually splits right down the middle, 50-50. Actually, they don't touch each other. The only thing that connects the right brain from the left brain is this thin little white thing called the corpus callosum, and it quite literally is a bridge. Now, we've known for a long time that meditators have thicker corpus callosums than non-meditators, but we weren't able to prove if it was the meditation that was causing that.
So is meditation like brain fitness for the right brain catch up to the left brain?
Yes.
Because we've cultivated that so much throughout our educational system and life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to start, that's what happens. You actually have a different brain when you're meditating than you do in your waking state, which I think in and of itself is pretty cool, mm-hmm. that we can now measure that and see that when you're meditating, different parts of the brain light up. Cool. But how is that going to, you know, help me have better sex or make me more fertile
or right.
like or get me the better car?
More patient on a long line.
Yeah.
You know, really simple things in life.
So that what happens is that over time, if you have a daily practice and you're transitioning from meditation, waking state, meditation, waking state, then what starts to happen is that the whole brain starts to light up at the same time. And then we start to utilize the full machine that we've been given.
Let's talk about if the research is the same in terms of what's happening in our brains across different types of meditations, to your knowledge.
So I went to a neuroscience conference about 3 weeks ago here in New York City, and it was fascinating because they showed a graph of the amount of studies that have been done on the brain and meditation from like 1970 until now, and it's just this asymptotic line. It's just shooting up, and it was like 3 studies in the 70s, and now it's thousands of studies that are being done on the brain and all different kinds of meditation. Most of them fall under one of 2 categories. Either a directed focus style of meditation or a non-directed focus style. So directing your focus would be basically most of mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Mindfulness is where you're focusing on something, where you are focusing on the feeling of your breath, a flame, your feet on the ground, a guided visualization. All of these things would be directing your focus. The type that I teach, we do use a mantra, but it is a non-directed focus style. The whole point is surrendering and letting go. You are not focusing.
So it's very different from some of the other meditations we're hearing about right now.
Very different.
Okay.
I think that any good meditation, it's all leading us to the same place.
That's a really key thing. I do want to understand that. Do you believe that they're all leading us to a similar place? Or do you believe that one is better than another?
Both. I think they are leading you to the same place, and I do think one is better for certain people than another.
Mm-hmm.
Any meditation worth its salt is going to lead you back to the most amazing version of you, right? It's a stress-relieving tool. Less stress in your body is going to help you perform at the top of your game. It's a very simple concept. However, they are drastically different roads to get there. So in most mindfulness practices, you're focusing. And if you have a thought, then you let it go, and you come back to the breath, or you focus on the sensation. But there's an agenda there, right? And there's a task. In what I teach, it's all about letting go. It's all about surrendering. And this is going to sound nuts, but you use the mantras almost as forgetting devices.
So is there a way to tell us simply how that works, how you would use a mantra as a letting go or forgetting device?
It's a simple concept. It's not simple for most Westerners and especially New Yorkers to put into practice because we're all so good at controlling, right? We love it. We love our illusion of control. And so it's very foreign for people to trust that if I let go, that I'm going to be okay. And it's one of the things I love about the silent meditation that I teach is because the practice itself, the effortlessness of it, the mantra, it almost renders you choiceless in that eventually your body's going to let go and then you have this beautiful, blissful experience. Your brain starts flooding with these bliss chemicals. And then on the other side, it's like it's rewarding you. And this concept of letting go, it's so simple and very hard to practice. And that is what takes a bit of time and a bit of instruction and a bit of refinement. And that's honestly what I teach. It's a surrendering course. But strangely, paradoxically, the more you start to surrender, the more nature can come in and help you get to where you want to go. I love to look at meditation as a performance tool, you know, because I'm fond of saying that we don't meditate to get good at meditation. We meditate to get good at life. And that's all styles, you know, mindfulness, guided visualization, a surrendering technique. It's all about you being the most amazing version of you. And so what I do on the Gaiam app is giving people, you know, breath work, guided imagery, some pep talks so you can really almost look those fear demons in the face and just move right past them. Because I believe that, you know, what we resist persists. And the harder you push against something, the harder it pushes back. So that's what I created for Gaiam. And I'm really proud of it. And I think it will give people something tangible to hold on to when we're in that fight or flight. Because normally we're nervous before a big performance. And so to just tell somebody to let go right before a big performance, it's not gonna work that well.
Right, right. So what I love about what you do is you have your style and the way that you were trained, which is your Vedic meditation, but you're also aware and interested in so many other styles, but you've chosen this as your preference.
Well, if I'm totally honest, I do all of this to inspire people to learn Vedic meditation. I think it is
okay.
The jam. I think it is the most effective style of meditation for people who aren't monks. What I call what I teach the lazy man's meditation.
Mm. Because people will love that.
Yeah, all you need is a chair and you get this key to the car. You learn how to turn it on and then the body just sort of does the work for you.
Yeah. Mm. So with Ziva style Vedic meditation, do you have to meditate 20 minutes twice a day? I mean, do you recommend that for a certain period of time or forever?
That's the recommended period of time. And it depends on the person, but I would say 8 to 10 years.
Is that what you do? Do you do 20 minutes twice a day?
Well, it depends on when I'm teaching. But if I'm teaching, sometimes I'll do it 5-6 times a day. But if I'm not teaching, then 20 minutes twice a day.
You know, in yoga, we talk a lot about taking yoga off the mat into the world. And I believe that's true for meditation too. There are times where I'm on the subway and I just close my eyes and I'm meditating on the D train. Mm. How do we take meditation out into the world with us?
Mm. Well, I think that if you're practicing every day, what's going to happen is that you're flooding your brain with all these bliss chemicals. And the idea is not that it feels nice in the meditation. The idea is that you fill up your tank with this energy, this happiness, this bliss, this fulfillment, and then you go and you deliver that throughout your day. So it's not like, well, I'm doing my to-do list so that I can be happy at the end of it. It's no, I wake up, I fill myself up with bliss and fulfillment and joy, and then I use my to-do list as a means by which to deliver my fulfillment. This, to me, is the entire point of meditation.
Do you think we're doing meditation to be happier, or do you think we're doing it for some other reason?
I think it's a perfect title for a book. And I think that the word that happiness is just a tiny range on the spectrum of emotions. And what meditation does is that it gives you access to your bliss and your fulfillment inside of you. And it is possible to experience bliss even when you're sad. It is possible to experience bliss even when you're scared.
Let's talk about bliss just for a second. I know you talked about it scientifically before. Like most people think about bliss as this, you know, it could be a
Girls Gone Wild,
right?
Happiness.
Euphoria.
Yeah,
you're not talking about that.
Mm-mm. When I say bliss, I mean the piece of you that knows that it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Even in crisis, even in trauma, there's always a tiny little sliver that knows that it's all good. And I used to say the piece of you that knows that it's all going to be okay. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean the piece of you that knows that it's all already okay. And the paradoxical thing that happens when you start to meditate, then actually it frees you up to feel the entire spectrum of emotions that most of us have been protecting ourselves from. And this is something that most people in the meditation world are not talking about too much, because they think, oh, well, I'm meditating now, so I should just be happier. I'm meditating, so I shouldn't be mad at that person in Whole Foods. I'm meditating, so I shouldn't be sad that my cat died. And that is not true at all. If anything, meditation is going to allow you to feel things more fully, more completely, because you're not protecting yourself from it anymore. But the more fully you feel it, the faster you move through to the new now.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you said that, because I think that's so important for people to know, that it really gives you tools you need sometimes to go through things in life. And so many people come to meditation because of, you know, a cancer diagnosis, or they broke up with their boyfriend, or someone died in their family, and they need something because they don't think they're going to be able to survive this moment in time. But I think if you can come to meditation before a crisis occurs, then you have that in your toolbox to move through it more effortlessly. It's still going to be hard. It's always hard. I mean, life is, you know, ebbs and flows. So nobody gets away with nothing bad ever.
And nobody gets out alive.
So, Emily, you talked a lot about Ziva meditation and about the course, which is 2 hours a day for 4 days, which I think I need to do immediately, like run to my nearest Ziva studio. But there's also something called Ziva Mind. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so this is something that I made because so many of my students in New York and LA were saying, you know, I want my mom to learn this, but she lives in Idaho, or I want my cousin to learn it, and he lives in Brazil. So I made something that's a bit more gentle that people could learn from anywhere in the world, and we made it into Ziva Mind. So it's actually just 8 days. It's about 15 minutes of video training a day, and each day builds upon the previous day's knowledge, so that at the end of that, you have a practice to take with you. And it also includes a bit of mindfulness, a bit of the guided visualizations. And so it's a nice combo platter of this lazy man's meditation and a bit of the guided visualization.
So how's your life now compared to, it seems like you're very mission driven, you love what you're doing, you're not stressed like you were when you were in Chorus Line or any of the other Broadway shows that came after that. Are you feel like you're in the right place at the right time?
I feel like I'm 100% doing what I'm meant to be doing, and I love it so much. I feel the happiest I've ever felt. I feel actually weirdly more creative than I've ever felt, even though I'm not in an artistic field anymore. I feel like I'm creating talks and logos and new programs, and that feels really inspiring. And honestly, I feel like teaching meditation is the first thing I've ever done where I get to use all of me. All of my performance training, all of my academic training, all of my fascination with neuroscience and medicine, which have always been hobbies, really, but I get to utilize all of this. And all of the things that I use to heal my own myself through, you know, my father's death and dealing with alcoholism and all of these things, like I'm able to utilize this for helping others. So not only does it feel like I'm utilizing all of my potential, but to do that for other people is the most rewarding thing. I mean, selfishly, the reason why I do this is because I wake up to emails from people every morning saying, you know, I stopped drinking, I wrote this book, I lost 10 pounds, I got promoted, it's so selfishly rewarding.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I can vouch for that because I've listened to some of your podcasts and I've heard stories from some of your students where they're having amazing, amazing success and transformations in their lives. So I know that you're having an amazing impact. So thank you for all the unbelievable work that you do. Thank you for your meditations on the Gaiam app and for all that you do for Gaiam. Really
appreciative. Thank you for all of your work.
Excited to see what's next with you and to take your class.
Yeah, I'd love to have you.
Thank you. Thank you all for listening, and we look forward to sharing more inspiring stories on our next episode. If you'd like to know more about Emily, check out zivameditation.com and check out her performance collection in Gaiam's Meditation Studio app in the App Store. If you have feedback or suggestions for stories, email us at untangle@gaiam.com. See you next time.